You're listening to Studio 360, and I'm Kurt Anderson. A lot of articles about the author Helen Oyeyemi include the word enviable. That's because she's published 5 critically acclaimed novels, and she's 29 years old. Born in Nigeria and raised in London, Oyeyemi excels at a particular kind of literary mashup, very thoughtfully blending age-old folktales and supernaturalism with more or less modern stories and characters. And she perfects that formula in her latest novel, Boy Snow Bird. It borrows the basic premise of Snow White to tell the story of 3 young women living in a small American town. This time around, there's a lot more emphasis on that damn mirror on the wall.
Nobody ever warned me about mirrors. Mirrors showed me that I was a girl with a white blonde pigtail hanging down over one shoulder, eyebrows and lashes the same color, still near black eyes, and one of those faces some people call harsh and others call fine-boned. And my complexion is unpredictable, goes from near bloodless to scalded and back again, all without my permission. There are still days when I can only work out whether or not I'm upset by looking at my face.
That is Helen Oyeyemi reading from her novel, Boy Snow Bird. Helen Oyeyemi, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
So this story has a few major surprises that I shall not give away, but instead of me trying to tiptoe around them, why don't you briefly describe this strange story?
In a lot of ways, it's a story about thinking that you're not involved in something and then suddenly finding that you're right in the middle of it. One of my main characters is a young woman called Boy Novak who has a difficult past and she runs away from it, but finds herself unexpectedly becoming a wicked stepmother. And it's set in 1950s and 1960s Massachusetts. Some aspects of it are my retelling of Snow White.
And this is your first novel, set in England. Do you think of this as an American story quintessentially somehow?
I do. I think it's a story that could only happen in America. I mean, it begins in the mid-50s, a time of these questions of worth that were connected to when we get right down to basics, to physical appearance.
Yeah.
And Boy being somebody who she's misinterpreted a lot, she's misunderstood a lot based on her physical appearance. She's kind of a Hitchcockian blonde, very,
yes,
very cool, languid, but internally very, very anguished. And she doesn't correct people's misapprehensions of her. Boy sort of gradually becomes aware of these automatic privileges that she has when she finds herself in contrast with other people that she meets in Flax Hill.
Yeah, which is the name of the little town in Massachusetts. You were born in Nigeria and grew up in London and have lived since in New York and Berlin and Paris and now Prague. As far as I know, there may be more. You obviously love big cosmopolitan places. So why set this story in this twee little New England town?
It was part of a way of making it a modern fairy tale. Like, it's the ideal compromise, right? Like, it's in America, but it's in small-town America.
Yeah.
So you can have the sort of microscopic and the telescopic in the same aspect.
Boy ends up meeting this local jeweler and his gorgeous daughter named Snow, and they marry eventually and have another daughter named Bird, thus the book's title.
Yes.
Along the way, you start to lean on and deconstruct Snow White. Was that your idea and plan from the beginning, or did that occur to you as you were writing?
No, it was my idea. I thought I had to take it apart, but obviously you have reasons for taking a story apart, and mine was to take it apart and to expose the mirror as the villain, because I feel like in the original story, the mirror just gets away with it.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to point out that the mirror is not the arbiter of who's the fairest of them all, and all 3 characters challenge that.
Now you've given away the whole book.
Oh.
did you – you must have reread the Grimm's Snow White, yeah?
Yes, I did. I reread it, but I always feel like my rereading was biased because I kept a very close eye on the mirror.
Yes?
Yeah.
It becomes much more than that idea, more than a retelling of Snow White. It is this gripping story that is both supernatural and, as you've suggested, historically specific about race and femaleness, which is not unfamiliar territory for you. Your books have dealt with those subjects. What did you feel other than, oh, Snow White, that you had to say differently about race and time and gender?
I think I wanted to talk a little bit about how difficult it is to be yourself when other people won't let you be, when they take your appearance and just hang any number of assumptions on that.
Uh-huh.
And there's no room to actually see each other and to actually communicate on any meaningful basis. After a while, it's just, everything just becomes scripted and you're just exchanging pleasantries based on your appearance. And I think that what I like about all three characters is that they very, very fiercely want to break out of that way of living. They want to be real people.
The Snow White idea of skin as white as snow becomes potent as we realize that there are black characters in this book who are passing as white. And I've read that you think of passing as white as a uniquely American thing.
Yes. I mean, there aren't very many accounts of it happening in Europe. But also, it seems to say something about the very mixedness of America.
Uh-huh.
And how everybody actually is each other.
Could I have you do another reading?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
At this point in the book, Boy is dealing with the differences in complexion of her adopted child, Snow, and that of her own child, the aforementioned Bird.
Snow would place a finger on each of Bird's palms and raise her little hands up when they closed into fists. She'd say, "I'm your best friend, Bird." Bird seemed to understand and believe this, and her eyes searched for her sister when she was away. Bird adored Snow. Everybody adored Snow in her daintiness. Snow's beauty is all the more precious to Olivia, her grandmother, and Agnes, because it's a trick. When whites look at her, they don't get whatever fleeting, ugly impressions so many of us get when we see a coloured girl. We don't see a coloured girl standing there. The joke's on us.
What do you want readers to think and feel after they hear or read that passage?
I mean, this isn't a book to make you feel cozy about who you are and where you're sitting and what your position is. I think that nobody comes out of the story looking particularly good.
Right.
The only way to feel is implicated, because we are all implicated in labeling each other and and treating each other based on assumptions.
Yeah, and I wondered, knowing that it was written by a black person who grew up in London, how many years or moments over those years of experience did this draw from?
I don't think I was conscious of drawing on any personal experience. By that point in the book, I was completely absorbed in
your little
boy and what she was going to do and what was going to happen next.
I often ask people who come here for their sort of aha moments as children or young people. You're still a young person, but as children, when some work of art decided them on becoming what they are, was there one for you? I've read that Little Women was a big deal for you.
Yes, it was enormous. It caused me this tremendous pain that made me want to fix every story that I thought something was wrong with, and here I am fixing stories. So I think that was a big one. I crossed out the things that I disagreed with, and I wrote in the true endings.
So really, the story, not just it wasn't copy editing.
I had no fear of the printed word. I just went in.
How old were you?
I must have been 9 or 10.
And did your parents think that was the cutest thing that they'd ever seen?
They were absolutely furious because it was a library book.
Uh-huh.
And there was some explaining to be done.
Huh.
But oh well.
So I will not go over again and again, as people inevitably do, she's so young, she wrote this fifth book, she's 29. But clearly, by some measure, you were kind of a prodigy, because you published your first one when you were still in university, that you'd written when you were a teenager. You must have read just a ton of good novels to be able to write one.
I was reading so hard. Like, by the time I was, 15, I was on to Kafka and Camus and and I have that thing where I can't pronounce like lots of words because I've never said them to anybody. I've only read them.
When my own daughters did that, that was the cutest thing ever.
So, yeah, I hope people think it's cute and just not, what is she saying?
Did you read a lot of fairy tales? Did you read Marquez? And
I did. I love Marquez.
Yeah.
I'm convinced I'm one of his characters, Fermin Adaza from Love in the Time of Cholera. she and I are one. The thing is, I don't tend to read, to pay too much attention to genre, which I think might be why my writing is the way it is, and that there are so many shifts in tone and register. So yeah, I'm just as comfortable with hard realism as I am with stories where people fly away with the washing sheets.
Yeah. You've said that when you were a teenager, you didn't expect to live much longer and you didn't expect to be alive at 30.
Mm.
Why?
I suffered from clinical depression, and also I was I was suicidal in just like this particularly reckless way, as in people would dare me to drink iodine in science lessons and I would just do it. I was just very ready to throw away my life. I don't think I understood that there was anything to live for. And so weirdly, that was a time at which I felt my most powerful. It was strange. Like my parents would tiptoe around me, teachers would tiptoe around me because they knew that that I could do it any time. And they just left me to find reasons to live, which I found in books, which sounds very cheesy, but all I wanted to do was read.
How scary and courageous of your parents to say, I guess you'll find your way out of this.
I think they knew me and didn't know me at the same time. Like, they knew me enough to find out that, to think that I would figure it out, but they didn't know what on earth was going on with me.
Unlike a lot of authors, you have a very light footprint online. You don't tweet. You used to blog. You don't seem to blog anymore. Is that because you'd rather save your brain power for your fiction?
Basically, I don't have that many thoughts. So I have to cultivate the ones that I have, like, very carefully. And I like to write to my friends, and I like my life to be mine.
So you're just a 20th century person.
Basically.
Helen Oyeyemi, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Helen Oyeyemi's new novel, Boy Snow Bird, is out right now.